The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC London Breakdown with Dan Tong. Come on now, Dan, we ain't got all day.
Smoke, fingers round your fingers. China, heave on to Houston. Do you think you've made the right decision this time?
What is up, degenerates and degenerates alike, or as I like to say, my friends? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com. And on today's program, we are going to be breaking down, that's right, UFC London, a place that I have not been, probably like 8 years. It was pretty cool, you know, I think I took one Xanax too many on the plane ride. Prescription, folks, but I was like, okay, yeah, these weren't a good idea, doc, because I was doing video blogging for this like month and a half long Euro trip, and I don't even know why I launched into this, but let's go with it. This is fun. I remember this is fun times, and I was doing this video blog to go along with it, and you could tell I'm fucked up because I record like the same video blog three times, like, all right, just landed in London, and unfortunately, I got like I didn't get Heathrow. What was it? London Gatwick. So I had to take the long bus in. So I was like just groggy as shit. And I got to like Waterloo Station, and I'm a movie freak. So I'm like, Jason Bourne, the dude, the journalist was shot here. Yeah. And just that, because that's how I landmark stuff, is by movies. And I ended up losing my wallet. I put it on like a kiosk thing. It was like, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna save money. Not going to use the cabs. I'm going to use a bus to get around. Cause people say, it's cheaper to go to the bus. So I could get a bus pass for like the week that I'm going to be in London. And I'm at like one of those kiosks where there's glass and stuff. And I put my wallet down and I go to reach, kind of turn around, and I turn back around, and the guy's still staring at me through the other side of the glass, but my wallet's gone. And I'm like, you see my wallet, man? He's like, nah, I don't see nothing. Yeah. Thankfully I had an emergency card and stuff. And, I had to had some funds, sent to me mid-trip, so I was like poor for the first half of my trip, but it actually made my trip like way, way, way more fun being like dirt poor and having to make sure to get to the rest of my trip. Anyways, that was a long, pointless story. What is up? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am Dan Tom. Probably not the guy you want to travel with, judging by that story, but I still have fond memories of London, made some good friends. And it's going to be a good card this weekend. But before we jump to the card, we are going to do some pleasantries real rat quick. Rat quick. There's going to be a nice little break here, like the next couple weeks. It's going to be like a 3-week break. Oh my goodness. And I'm going to be working through that break, sadly. But like for my fellow media workers, analysts, cappers, people on the grind, you know who you are. Props to you, and I feel bad because, I'm enthusiastic like you are, and your enthusiasm makes me enthusiastic, and I love this community, but man, Dan Tom's been needing a break, so this is gonna be good, although I won't be taking a break. I'm actually got this big fat checklist that I've been sweating on. I've been listening to your things, and I'm gonna be taking care of these things, in other words, during this break. So, people said, SoundCloud, that's number one on the list, followed by Stitcher. We're going to come there. Everybody keeps asking for YouTube, and I know that's kind of a big thing, and I should be kind of moving in that direction, and it'll open other windows, like, doing technique breakdowns on the mat, maybe doing stuff at Extreme Couture. If you guys want to see that, I'll pull, like, other fighters and coaches, so it's not my ass jawing on. You already hear that sadly enough. Thank you for subscribing here, but you hear me enough, and I hate hearing me, so like I said, I like hearing from other people. Fighters are awesome, but also, I really like the coaches and people behind the fighters, so maybe we'll do some stuff like that on the YouTube channel, but getting this is what people, I guess, are asking for, and it's cool, like, I did a Kelton show and Half the Battle, Daniel Levy show, and I know they do that, and that's all great, but man, I hate seeing my fucking face. But if you guys want to see it, that's cool. and do the YouTube channels. Some of you reached out. I appreciate any opinions, so please jump on these opinions, yay or nay on any of them. You're not going to hurt my feelings. You're going to actually help me, to be honest. So please do that, because that's what I'm going to be working on. Still, you know, working on this, you know, transitionary phase, sharpening some things. Sorry, I like of course hiccups come out of nowhere. I didn't even drink except coffee and water today. So, anyways, but yeah, you know, sharpening up some things, the betting segment, and hopefully, you know, revamping in order to find a home for the fantasy segment. I know a lot of you've been asking what happened to the DraftKings, and in this whole transitionary phase, I'm just trying to. I wanted to find an appropriate home for it, but in order to find an appropriate home, you have to have an appropriate product. So I really want to kind of take that to the next level. And hopefully I'll have that for you guys after this break soon too. And since there won't be any, you know, UFC cards, I really don't have time. I'll be kind of getting ahead of the current schedule, finishing up scouting reports, personal projects, etc. Like I just mentioned, but I will be doing top five podcasts, because that's right, we're like half... supposed to be like half top five on this podcast, right? These top five themes, which, by the way, are freaking fun, especially when you've got people like Jordan Killian or Robin Black or gosh, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on names. This is good that I'm actually having enough episodes to actually like sift through and forget fucking who I've had on, because I'm an asshole like that. So yeah, wow, Dan, stop the cursing. We did that two shows ago. But, no, sorry, actually, cursing's more than welcome, but yeah, I'll try not to turn this into a Tarantino film on y'all. But yeah, we're gonna be doing a lot of top five, so please, this is an actual time. It's hard, you know, I'm gonna preview the card anyways, and if you're listening to me, you're listening to me because you want to get a certain thing that I'm kind of already gonna give you, so I get, you know, the participation on that, so that's why I'm not really, like, if you notice, I haven't been touching on the submissions in transition using the hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast for these breakdown shows, because there's not much. You know, hot takes and questions more come than the post shows, the after party. That's where it's fun. We've all got some drinks in us. We can kind of talk crap and all that fun stuff. And in a loving way, of course, you know, all positivity and fun times here. But, you know, yeah, we also can bust each other's balls because, yeah, we have to have that too. anyways, but yeah, so if you have suggestions for top five, like my buddy John Rico was saying, one of like top five post fight interviews, which is something near and dear to my top of my list as far as episodes I want to roll out to you. We'll definitely do that. I know I'm going to get together with my man John Lee here, and we're going to do top five worst MMA tattoos, which is going to be fun. So submit your ideas, and if not, follow us at the PYN Podcast on Twitter. And we'll be announcing, and I'll be retweeting stuff through my handle as well, at the MM Analyst on Twitter. But we'll announce, you know, ahead of time. So that way you can, you know, even if you don't, you know, get your list submitted or your theme submitted, you can still participate in the list by using hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast. And, you know, 140 characters is tough. When we, you know, do Facebook and then when I get more up to date on the rest of the social media branches, which I'll be doing in these next couple weeks, you know, you can be able to interact through there, you know, DM me, all that stuff. If you want to go about it that way, it's all good. So yeah, participation, top five, we're going to be doing those. Please participate. It's going to be nice though. Like I'm actually going to have time to watch movies. Like I'm not going to lie. I gave myself time to watch a movie. It was crazy. I think it was like, aside from, I went to the movies with my girlfriend. We saw, what did we see? Wow, Dan. Jesus, you only had fucking one beer. Jeez. Oh, we were going to see Star Wars, but she was like, she's like, Dan, it's not out. And I'm like, what do you mean? I know it's, you know, came out a bit ago, but like, it should be pretty quiet down right now, right? She's like, it came out in December. Like, I've been just stuck in this bat cave, just working my butt off, and I don't even realize, I have no concept of time, what day of the week it is. And that's a normal thing for me, people. This isn't like a random funny thing I'm sharing with you. This is just an example of many. So she's like, yeah, that's no longer in theater, you dumbass. No, she didn't say that. She's a sweetheart. But, so we went to see, boy, what did we see? Oh, Logan, yeah, it was depressing. Yeah, 8-year-old Dan was depressing, and 31-year-old Dan was like, with his narrative and editing is like all over the fucking place. But I made some time to watch some movies, and so I'm trying to do this thing, not just make time to watch movies, but it's this thing where, like, you know, I'm trying not to watch fights before I go to sleep, because as you can tell by my, you know, fast million miles a minute, where, you know, just, you know, sounds like I'm hypercharged with electricity. My brain definitely doesn't need encouragement, right? Like, that's big time why I have trouble sleeping at night, because my brain is just spinning, and it's like multiple plates spinning. And it's cool, like, when it comes to stuff like, you know, active stuff like grappling or driving, when you're having to multitask with visual coordinations or doing my job as an analyst, because I get to put those monkeys and spinning mice, you know, mice on the running wheels to work, you know, so to speak. But at night it's tough. So it's like, I listen to the Tim Ferriss podcast, a really good podcast to listen to, author, essentially just kind of studies successful people and tries to share that through his books and through his podcasts. A lot of helpful tips, yada, yada. And one of them is just kind of like tuning out and embracing fiction for, like, I think the last hour or so, at least, or 2 hours before bed. And it helps you kind of wind down, tune out, get more quality rest, fall asleep easier, et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, okay, cool. I've been looking for an excuse to watch movies. Like, if anybody doesn't know, I'm a movie nut. Like, it's a problem, like, buying movies. I go into a Best Buy like a drug addict. Like, I think I've sold like 60% of my collection, and I still have like 400 DVDs, which are like turning into vinyls now, which, yes, I have those too. I'm actually not a pack rat. I have very minimal stuff, but, like, yeah, most of my, like, aside from, like, physical furniture, which is small, it's, yeah, it's movies and, like, music. But yeah, so I was like, you know, let's dive into something that, like, I've seen a billion times, like close to my top 10 as far as, like, movies I've seen, just ridiculous reps, right? I know it very well, and I won't be, like, intrigued, I won't be hooked to see what's next. Like, I gotta watch the whole thing, 'cause that would be, like, a trapping of mine, too, where I feel like, okay, I have to watch the whole movie now. And so I'm like, well, Bill Paxton, RIP, died, and I gotta get my Bill Paxton fix in, and I thought I had True Lies, and that's my favorite Paxton performance, right? He's the sleazy car salesman where he's talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger about his wife. Titties that'll make you make for buttermilk. Ass like a 10-year-old boy. Oh, man, shout out to Ross, this guy I used to valet park with at Caesar's Palace like a decade ago. He had that, like, he was up to date. This was like before the iPhone was out, and he had, like, somehow made that a drop on his phone when he got a text, and it would be Bill Paxton saying, "Daddy's gonna make a bake for buttermilk. Ass like a 10-year-old boy." I'm sorry to all the 10-year-old boys and sensibilities of women. I'm not trying to offend either, who, you know, 'cause so many of you listen to the Protect Your Neck podcast, by the way. But yeah, it was great. So I watched Aliens. Yes, Aliens 2, Aliens, instead, which I love. That's like an all-time classic. That's like Halo, that video game ripped the shit out of that, right? Like, down to the sergeant character, the black dude with the cigar. Like, yeah, the Aliens was the shit, and game over, man! Game over! Which I'll probably reference later on in the podcast, because, you know, I like to refer to some guys entering, you know, their game is so sharp, like submissions or what have you, it becomes game over territory. But yeah, that's Bill Paxton's line in Aliens. And, you know, old Dan Tom cracked open a beer. And one of my favorite things is just, I don't get trashed or anything, but I just nice having a beer too, just because that's just like a good, like, buzz where you feel a nice buzz and you kind of coast, you know, on a beer or two. You know, I'm talking about, you know, stretching it through a movie, an entire movie kind of a thing. And I'm like, you know, I'm probably not going to make it that far, but the beer will help me wind down. I was having trouble sleeping, like, kind of the whole point, because this is an MMA podcast. We're talking about movies here, right? That's the whole point. Almost done here. Bear with me. Stay on target. Stay on target. But, yeah, so I was cracking open a beer, and I'm like, okay, at least, like, I won't finish this movie. I've seen it, like, so many times. I can almost, you know, maybe not quote it, but, you know, I've seen it so many times, and, like I probably won't. I'm so tired. I almost fell asleep, like, putting the DVD in. Like, I'm not gonna make it but like 20 minutes. Smash cut, it's 2 hours later. Probably 4 beers later. It's like the end scene. Ripley's going down the tunnel to meet the queen. She's got the duct tape and she's strapping together the pulse rifle and the flamethrower. I'm fuck yeah, Ripley, fuck yeah. It was ridiculous. Not really, I wasn't getting that excited, but it was ridiculously stupid. Like, I was just like laughing at myself, like getting excited, like, you got suckered in. You watched the whole movie, you drank about 2 to 3 times more than you intended, and you're an adult. Congratulations. All right, that was a pointless story. Sorry about that. But let's get on to UFC London. It's a lax format here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. I don't want to be too uptight. I speak fast enough. We talk about mixed martial arts enough. I hate news because it's always changing, and I'm not going to do current events or any of that bullshit on this podcast. So yeah, you're going to get random movie and personal Dan Tom shit from time to time, not all the time. I won't torture you all the time. So we're going to go to the main card, starting off on Fight Pass. This is the first fight on our avoids list. We have Lena Landsberg versus, what's her first name? Padalova. I believe she's from Czech Republic. And they have fought before. This is a rematch from a couple years ago. I came across this when I was doing my tape study for Landsberg, for her. Yes, that's right, Lena Landsberg. Yeah, she's the one that fought Cyborg for UFC Brasilia, I believe, back in September. If you all remember that one. And yeah, this was a really boring match. Like, literally, it's pretty much cage pressing the whole time. And Lena Landsberg was doing it. And when you watch what's available of Pudilova's other fights, she gets cage pressed a lot. I mean, we're going to talk about that more with a kind of another fighter's frame coming later in the card. But yeah, when you're very tall amongst your contemporaries, your hips are going to be open, which is going to open up takedowns, clinches, shots over the top. And Landsberg is a durable girl. Most people were surprised that she lasted a round two with Cyborg. Her Muay Thai is nothing spectacular. It's not like it's nowhere near Shevchenko level. And I wouldn't say it's north of Kovalkiewicz, although it you could argue it's within that area, although they're different styles, different girls, different weight classes. But yeah, -300 is sadly about right, but you know how I feel about these female fights. The swings are like heavyweight males in the sense of the results can just swing from either way. So I recommend with caution. I think I put one fun parlay in one house. I only bet using two houses, Bovada and Five Dimes, and she was in one of those parlays. That was it. That's like a $5 parlay, so... Yeah, I stayed away, and I suggest you do too. The next one is also on the fights to avoid. There's the tall person I was talking about. Yes, that's right, Scott Askham versus Bradley Scott. This is like a fight where I was like, wait, didn't these guys like fight? No, because they've essentially pretty much like fought the same guys. It's like that Euro circuit where like we're just gonna mix and match them. Like for example, Scott's probably going to be pushed to get, matched up with Seed and Vlad, win or lose, whether he wins or loses, Scott Askham, he'll probably get matched up with Seed and Vlad or something. And along those lines, it's like, hey, you sit on that table, because you're that color. No, maybe not that dramatic, but you get what I'm saying here. It just feels like very, not trying to pick on the matchmaking, but very, okay, I get what you're doing. Huh. Well, real creative. Oh, these guys both lost. They're in the same card. It's hard to blame them, right? There's so many damn cards. I should stop talking shit, and I should be finding similar cheats to make my job easier, like these guys are in some ways, you could argue. But fights to avoid. I got Scott here. I don't know if he's gonna get on top against the. Or I got Scott Askham, I should say. I don't know if he's gonna get on Brad Scott because not that he's stout, he's not that short or anything, but as far as takedown defense goes, he's got a Muay Thai base, although he's not, a Muay Thai specimen by any means. He has the fundamentals, he seems to have a decent strong base in the clinch, and something that I'm sure he carried over from Muay Thai and worked more so, because he generally likes to keep the fight standing. Like I said, with those tall people, though, they're prone to, shots over the top, so, Bradley Scott gets Scott Askham over the top with shots. Possibly take him down where Scott Askham has been troubled. But if Scott Askham ends up on top, he's got some nice elbows. He has some really nice catch controls. That Atherton submission wrestling, I believe, is very very catch-based influence with the grappling styles of the guys I see come out from there. So I'm just going to watch that one and watch all the Castle people show up. And I wonder if they have their own, party after. It's only Castle people with the armor and stuff. You know what I'm talking about? A bunch of people with like the English flags and like they look like they're the opposing army of Braveheart essentially showing up for Scott Askham's fight. So that'd be cool actually. They should like Scott Askham should fight like he's not in the same weight class as Paul Craig, but you see where I'm going there. All right, Dan, off the movie talk. You already tortured them enough. Next fight. All right, we have our first parlay pieces. We have Brett Johns, the Welshman, who was impressive. I picked him and was impressed with him on his regional circuit fights before his last fight. But yeah, did well his last time out. This is a sophomore appearance against Ian Entwistle. You know the deal with Entwistle. He is a do-or-die leg lock guy, and as a leg lock guy, he does not make me proud. Doesn't show much more to his game once he gets to the higher level. If you go watch his regional circuit, it's that trend. It's kind of this trapping, which I'm going to talk about later in a fight, where you get successful with a leg lock, and you're like, holy crap, I can just keep doing this. Because, like I say, the reason why leg locks are awesome is because they're such an equalizer, right? Like, gyms, like, there's gyms that'll throw you out, like, especially, like, traditional gi jiu-jitsu gyms, you start doing leg locks and stuff, and even, like, respectfully, I remember, like, just dropping for some, like, working with, like, nice guys, but when I lived in New York, I'd work with a lot of the Marcelo Garcia guys when the gym got too expensive to train, and I ran out of addresses to use for my free memberships, luckily, I befriended a lot of the guys, who train there, and New York is just such a common problem. It's so expensive. There's like apartment sessions, or like people would have like who had nice apartments. They'd lay out mats, and we'd all meet up and have roll sessions. And people were like so antsy on leg locks. It was crazy. But you know, I've had coaches that told me the same thing before, and then sure enough, that's how I've kind of had my knee problems. So yeah, you live and you learn. But yeah, at the same time, I'm not a live by the sword, die by the sword guy. I'm very realistic about leg locks. I encourage using the scramble. I've always been safe. I've never been a cranker. And so I don't like guys like Falhares, and I don't really like guys like Entwistle. I'm not saying as a person or as a martial artist, just saying stylistically here. And with the do or die, I would already favor Johns to win through a multitude of ways. Johns is a very well-rounded game. Not gonna go into it that deeply here, just go look him up, but you'd have multitude paths of winning. I just feel inside the distance, it's a popular play out there. I'm gonna be using it for a parlay fodder, so you can do it right now for Johns. I believe he's like plus 440, 420 depending what houses you're looking at, and inside the distance minus 292 in that range, probably going to climb. So get on that quick, attach that as your kind of key pieces. He's amongst my key, and so is the next man, and that is going to be, that's right, Tom Breeze, the Kurgan from Highlander, against the Holy War Angel, Ollie Wally Bungbushy. Wow, this really could be like a match of freaking on the Highlander movies. Dan, get off the movies. Relax. Anyways, Tom Breeze. But yeah, he did look at the Kurgan, though, after that Kyle Pendred mauling. He had the blood on him. The eyes as black as hell. I'm like, Jesus, guy's no soul. It's like a shark eyes. But yeah, I've been a big fan of Tom Breeze. I know there's been a controversy about him going to TriStar, because if you watched his regional fights, Cage Warriors, etc. I really like it. I really like long, lanky guys you don't like guys to work off their back, no matter how good they are in MMA, but by nature of, losing rounds, low percentage, etc., taking damage. But he's a long, big guy who is like small guy jiu-jitsu, and like he excellent hips. Like you barely see, Tom Breeze's hips off the mat. And I say you got to go to his regional stuff, because that's where you see most of his jiu-jitsu. He hasn't really had to show it, which I'll get to in a second in his UFC career. But, like, he'll go to overhooks and just kind of climb and find these angles. And I really dug it. Southpaw, behind the jab. And those things increased when he went to TriStar. And people, TriStar, as far as fighters going there for the mixed results we've seen, as I say, the TriStar, high-level TriStar transplants, as I refer to him, but Breeze is one of those. I'll talk about that more with a later matchup, but Breeze is one of those, where people are like, oh, he got more boring, because TriStar, it's three things, right? It's, in my opinion, it's ring generalship, jab fundamentals, and wrestling for MMA. Those are the three things that Faraz seems to really work to instill upon his fighters to do inside the fighting cage. So, yeah, now kind of adding a third fold, if you will, he's not there anymore. I don't know if there's drama to this or they're still cool. I'm not sure, but yeah, he breezes back in England. It could be, you know, money wise, right? It's not expensive. Yeah, I'm sure it was kind of a no-brainer. He was going to be booked for that London card. So, you know, why not move back and train at home? And this one, by the way, a fourth fold. If you didn't know, Tom Breeze is a welterweight. This is going to be middleweight. Yeah. I mean, Bombose is a middleweight, and Breeze will be his first fight at middleweight. I'm not sure if he did it prior. Not ringing a bell currently, but. But yeah, and I think that is going to be a good thing. I think Breeze, regardless of the TriStar thing or not, I think he's due for kind of putting the game together. You know, you see guys transferring camps, maturing, getting older, translating to the big stage. All these things in singles are more than an excuse for successful fighters to not successful fighters and everything in between. We've all seen these hiccups, right? Of like, oh, why these bumps? And we look, oh, he was just going through a growing phase or this or that. Well, Breeze like has three legitimate check marks. So that, and he still, you know, has been winning except for what? A close split decision loss that many, including myself, scored for him. Although not atrociously, it was a close fight that like I feel Strickland just about had as much right to the scorecard, so I had really no issue with that at all. But I'm saying he's been doing well, so I guess is the point I'm trying to say. So I feel like he's gonna have a turnaround performance, and I think what fuels that is the 185. I think it's a good thing. Not only is he big, huge for welterweight, he's like 6'3", so he's gonna be just fine as a 185er with his wingspan and all that good stuff. But the measuredness, over-measuredness that people were kind of forking over and blaming TriStar and Faraz for, maybe that'll be quelled with this move to 185 and some comfort back home. We'll see that old Tom Breeze that got people really excited and the hype kind of going when he came onto the scene. Anyways, he is the parlay piece there. You can get him for -300 if you want to do the thing I did with Johns and parlay inside the distance. I feel pretty good about that because, yes, Breeze is the official recommended prop, played for one unit -145. It's chalk. I'll probably get carried with the way a lot of these lines have been going. So we'll see. We'll see if that even happens. But regardless, it's one of the few lines I like. There's not a lot of lines. You quickly find yourself reaching for bets, which is never a good thing. Even after thoroughly dissecting and putting the time in this card, I was like, yeah, still not a lot I'm excited for. Usually by the time I'm done doing my research and all that good stuff, there's a lot more I like, but negative, not this time. Okay, Mark Diakesi versus Teemu Pakkalin. This one is like borderline on my fights to avoid. I left Diakesi out of my parlays, and I'd be lying to you if I didn't play Pakkalin by submission for fun. Small, of course, because the pick is Diakesi. He should win. He impressed me against, Frankie Signs. Looks like the extra from Bronx Tale All Grown Up. Right? Get out of the car. Anyways, he looked really good his last time out, but it just worries me because, you know, he'll muscle things like, and it looks cool or whatever, like, you know, his first time out, UFC 204 against Saevsky. But, you know, I don't want to say I'm worried about him getting tired because I was worried about that before. And again, there's a lot of answers from his ground skills to his composure, IQ, conditioning that were answered in the third round of DKC's last fight. So that's why I'm picking him. But the thing is, this is kind of that trap fight where you'll see it in the form of knockouts or submissions where young guys kind of get taxed early in their careers, even the best of them. Maybe they don't get taxed, they don't lose in those forms. It's like they have that bad performance or there's just that not even a bad performance, they just come across that difficult style matchup and they don't know how to come across an awkward opponent, you know, like they hit a Lyoto Machida or something like that, and obviously Pakalin's not a Lyoto Machida, but you know me as a guy who likes weird positions, these give and take positions, these high risk kind of things like turtle position that Pakalin plays, and just that whole presenting, you know. And he hit my favorite Peterson sweep from the turtle, where he kind of baited the grip in a little bit of a different way, or at least the grip was presented him a different way, but he Peterson rolls nonetheless, and it's beautiful. And he rolls the opponent right over the top of him, and turns his hips and ends up, you know, almost like he's finishing a double leg coming on top and side control. It's something that I'll kind of bait a lot, whether I'm in a scramble and a guy's trying to, you know, I go up to a turtle and a guy's trying to quickly beat my arms and, you know, get to my back or get to a side ride. They're so focused on beating my arms and kind of getting around, getting away from a front headlock and getting to a more dominant position, a side ride, because they can, you know, take it back from there and stuff, that once they get there, there's this beat where they're like, oh, thank God I get there. And usually, like, I'll kind of wait for that beat and trap and kind of hook their elbow in and roll, because they're going to set their weight on you. And you see Pakalin do that in his fight with Michael Labou, his debut fight, and it was just beautiful. So I'm a little biased here. I'm a fan of this guy. But it's these tricky guys like this, though, is my point, that can tax young guys like DKC, who have been able to make these decisions that might not have been the smartest for energy or risk and so forth. And his just sheer athleticism and skills been able to carry him through. This game doesn't care about that. Everybody gets taxed. Everybody has to pay their taxes. Sometimes it's small taxes, and but everybody has to pay those first taxes, right? And this could be that fight. So I was scared away from it. I inevitably stayed with the pick for the reasons I stated. But yeah, I mean, even on the feet, he's gonna have to be careful. We saw Pakalin; he has a real sneaky uppercut. And what does DKC do for his defense when he's not utilizing his fleet of foot speed? He's utilizing a shell guard. And what does shell guards traditionally open up? Body shots and uppercuts. Now, Pakalin has not thrown a lot of body shots in what I've seen of his regional footage outside the UFC and his UFC fights, but opening up, you know, the hip space, you know, obviously for takedowns, but more importantly, yes, the aforementioned uppercut. So, I mean, there are threats all over this one. So, it's a tempting parlay piece, especially because the line's going down, but the line's going down for a reason. It's because Pakalin's live. It's not just my hipster sensibilities for guys who play turtle and give positions to get bigger ones and play that gambling game. No, there's some live stuff there. Moving on to the next one, which was tough. Some people asked me about this fight, and I told my early lean was Luque, and that is my pick for Luque versus Leon Rocky Edwards. Essentially, Edwards, you know, everyone's like, oh, striker, fast hands, precision. And that's true, and he's really fast, but if you notice, the speed always goes down, as well as overall gas tank past round one, like with everything, especially his striking speed, though, especially. And even more so now, because the great thing about Edwards is he's improved his wrestling. And I've mistakenly underrated it. And so have other people. And really looking closer to look at it the second time around, I mean, there's a lot of stuff he's doing that I like. Why should I be sorry for relating it back to me? It's the only point of relation I can really relate. I can't relate it to, Forrest Griffin or somebody else, right? So I guess I'll relate it to me. But no, I really appreciate the stuff that I was seeing from Rocky Edwards. Not that he's getting better takedowns or this or that, but, you know, he the fact that he is using, going from reactionary shots to the outside foot reaps and trips and sweeps from the clinch and on the ground. I mean, I love that the way he kind of sets his weight, it's very heavy the way he plays, but also very float-like and relaxed, where he's ready to bounce and move and adjust and float and advance and take more as he goes. And I really like that style. He's going for the seatbelt to kind of give you something to fight, give him something to fasten to, and just completely changes the game if you have a half guard side scissor in that position, you know, when you're reaching behind him. When I say seatbelt, it's when you're like a half guard, when you're on top and you're kind of, the guy's looking to kind of get up and turtle up and get his legs out from underneath and untangled from you, so to speak. And you kind of reach behind, lower his back and behind and grab his wrists from behind and take out his post. Break him back down, get a better grip, kind of switching off to a cradle from there. If the back of their head is nearby, you can start working out of the half guard from there. And Leon Edwards is doing all those kind of things, setting up those pathways. The problem is, despite those catch-like sensibilities, that's the word I was looking for, because you know me, I'm catch wrestling enthusiast over here, love it. But Vicente Luque is very familiar style, Lucha Libre, which I'll spare you the history lesson, but it is very interesting when you look back the styles of Latin and South America, shoot box, Lucha Libre. Lucha Libre essentially is like kind of how we tie in Japan's pancrase and professional Japanese pro wrestling and how it has its ties to MMA. Well, that's essentially Lucha Libre when it comes down, to Vale Tudo and that whole scene down in Brazil and South America. And then that kind of goes even into, luchador and professional wrestling to their own scenes down there. So it's very similar to catch wrestling, although I'm not too familiar with it, but he's a purple belt or purple stripe, because I do the same thing with Neil, purple stripe or Neil for catch wrestling. There's no real belts, we don't really use geese, so I think it's more of just a kind of a thing, not for fun, because that kind of sounds demeaning, but just, as I was told, it's just so you kind of have a place in the community for tournaments, classes, etc. But I'm not really into the rank stuff, but just kind of to give you an idea, though, that the system when you go to the UFC.com and you read, purple stripe, Lucha Libre, what is that? And the reason why I mentioned my coach Neil is because, Vicente Luque actually trains with him, and Vicente Luque really took on to his style. You can just go on his Instagram where he's advertising his new book. Shout out to Neil Melanson and his new book out. Go to his Instagram or Vincent De Luque's to check that out. But Neil's really good from the front headlock and Darces. And I've told the story before, one of my many trips to Alliance when he was down there, he was working on kind of finishing the Darce off your back with Phil Davis, because it's kind of position Phil Davis like, Phil Davis really likes those funky positions, and going over the specifics of curling your stomach into the back of their tricep, kind of fold that arm over, make sure getting into the center of your belly, getting a curl, extension, etc. And it was crazy, because it was like I almost saw this tutorial being executed by Vicente Luque. Now he caught kind of two, he did an anaconda and a darce, he's caught him off two different angles. But I can kind of just see certain fundamental steps that he did, I guess is what I'm trying to say better, applied, and it was just really cool to see that. And it was kind of around the same time, right before, I believe, Chaz Skelly scored one. And yeah, so it was really cool to see someone, teach something somewhere and apply it to other places and see high-level pros start picking those things up. And you're like, oh, I remember them working that one out and yada yada yada. So it was really cool. And as I watched more footage, I felt more comfortable. Vicente Luque, although he's not slow by any means, I think Leon Edwards will be faster, especially in the first round. I think what will keep Luque safe is his stance switches, his feints, and the distance management he uses, because he comes from a karate background, and even though he doesn't have a big sample size against southpaws, because Leon Rocky Edwards is a southpaw, the speed and precision, counter striking, and scare-offs from Edwards, I think, won't be as potent, because just having that experience, you just kind of read that distance, and in traditional martial arts, you actually just deal with much more southpaws, and I believe, I want to say Luque started off as a southpaw. When you watch his earlier footage, I believe he used that more, whereas like now, I believe he's much more, he'll switch, but I think he's much more dominant from orthodox side. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think he's going to switch up, and Edwards, if anybody, will be the one thrown off. Takedowns will be interesting, because Edwards does well from the body lock, but he shoots a lot, and when he shoots, he really commits hard. And although Luque's not quite game over man territory like a Tony Ferguson as far as the front headlock goes, he's up there. And when Edwards gets tired and those shots start coming slower, you could see it. I don't know if it's going to be inside the distance, TKO, submission, decision or what, but I did play Luque straight up, and I put him in a few of my parlays. One of my cores, not my core ones, but one of my cores for sure, and some fun ones. I think I only did like 6 parlays total, so I mean, not that much. But yeah, he's in like probably like half those, okay? Yeah, next fight, Tim Johnson versus Daniel Omielanchuk. All right, I got Timothy Johnson, who, by the way, it's cool to been seeing him, you know, finishing out camps at Extreme Couture, coming in to work with Roy Nelson, etc. Who, since that fight's announced, that's who my scouting report I got done with was for Volkov. Excited for that fight. I believe Timothy Johnson beat Volkov when he fought him. Close fight, but yeah, no need to argue or rehash that here. Essentially, here's how this fight breaks down. I think Omielanchuk is tough as shit and underrated. The problem is, I think he's going to play into Tim Johnson. Tim Johnson hasn't been stopped. He's durable and battle-tested, though hittable. And even though he's hittable, he's usually hittable when he's coming forward from counter-strikers. And seldom will you see Omielanchuk counter or take back steps unless he's like just doing a reset to attack again. I wouldn't be surprised to see Omielanchuk try to go up to the head, even though he's short and Tim Johnson is tall. He's really deceptive with getting his kicks up there. I do suspect he'll try to test Tim's body because of that and because of Tim's chin. So definitely look for that. But the problem is that Timothy Johnson can fight forward as well, but he can also fight going backwards. So I think he can facilitate, in other words, Omielanchuk's style. You know, he's got a really good check hook, right hook, that I think is going to be worth watching out for in this fight. And we even saw in his last fight, he's improved on using the, it's not quite Conor McGregor abusing the inside angle as a southpaw. Tim Johnson, the southpaw, by the way. But, you know, he does have a nice counter left that he's developing to go along with that check right hook. So he's going to be real dangerous when he develops that. Furthermore, I like his second line of defense because this could get really ugly, as a lot of these heavyweight fights can, with cage pushing. And as you know, Omielanchuk is like a king of cage pushing, right? Well, the problem is Timothy Johnson is probably maybe next to, like, you know, under Fabricio Werdum and guys like that, of course, the worst guy you can press against in the clinch. Like, you can go back and look at his early fights in the UFC to his fights, regional fights, especially in his regional fights. Like, he's knocking guys out with his back to the fence. Like, it looks like he's taking a break, but for some reason, every guy that he's with is, like, not getting takedowns, or if they do, he gets right back up because he's deceptively agile, deceptively good cardio. And so you see these guys get tired trying to work, strike, and wrestle Tim against the cage. And not only is Tim good, comfortable, composed, good wrestling and base there, like I said, he's knocked guys out from there. Like, he can generate power with his back to the fence. He counters well, keeps his composure, and can get out of there when necessary, although, you know, might have stayed there too long with guys like Tabora, but Tabora was good, and Tim Johnson had like a broken arm for the last half of the fight, so we can give him a break. He's tough as shit, so I feel good about Tim Johnson. If he wasn't a heavyweight, he probably would be on my pieces for your parlay, as he is admittedly on probably 2, maybe 3 of mine. The fun ones, maybe not the core, well, maybe one core one, actually, like 1-3, like, which is as big as my cores get, 2 or 3, that's about it. Yeah, okay, to Tim Johnson, next one, Francis Marbehose, the time sucker of all time suckers. Oh my god, all the time I've spent watching fights and the damage I've done to my cells and my eyes and my vision, and I want that time back only for Francis Marbehose footage. Fuck, does he make a 15-minute fight feel like 50 fucking minutes? We saw this fight. This was a rematch with Mr. Stewart, Darren Stewart, England. Now it's on his home turf. Before, it was in Brazil. picked Stewart to win the first one. I think he was favored. With pressure, you know, against the cage and strikes, that's what he used. Did this headbutt, had a weird clash of heads. Bahose just tapped out of the fight. Like, I'm going to tap out of this breakdown to try to compensate for all the time wasted on watching Francis Marbehose footage. Fuck that. Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm sorry. Just terrible, awful fucking fighter to watch. You never hear me say that, but I will say it unabashedly about him. Okay, next fight. Last one on the prelims before we take a quick break, and it will be quick back half the show because there's only 4 fights left after this, but Joe Duffy. Oh, Joseph Duffy. Versus Reza Madadi. Wow, yeah, definitely. Man, this is probably the scariest looking mugshot. Oh, by the way, you know what I'm saying? I don't like doing like current events, and I don't like doing like performance of the night and all that stuff. I think I'll do this one. Like, we'll do hashtag UFC mugshots if you want to contribute your opinions or whatever, you know, as hot takes or whatever, or, you know, whatever. Just use hashtag particular podcast, actually. But mugshots, I mean, as far as, like, the pictures on UFC.com, you can have, like, I take this from shout out to the MMA Latest Roundtable guys. I always make comments about, like, what everybody looks like. Like, okay, which guy looks like the most like a sex offender? And, like, you know, like, Tamden McCrory is, like, the worst. Like, and it sucks. Tamden McCrory is, like, a really nice guy who has kids, but dude looks like he is hungry for children with his photo. And, like, for example, I love Tim Johnson, but, like, if folks, if you go to UFC.com and you look at this UFC London card and we have all the mugshots lined up, and I'm like, okay, most likely to touch a kid? Yeah, Timothy Johnson's ending up on the top of that list. Yeah, probably. And I want to avoid most likely to commit a crime, because that's where you get in trouble. Because I actually would have said, like, Reza Madadi, and not picking on Reza. There's just a lot of UFC fighters with criminal backgrounds. And then we can also get into the, hey, Dan, that's kind of racist territory. So we'll avoid maybe that one. And we'll keep it friendly with sex offenders, because that's family friendly, right? Yeah, Dan. Wow. That's what I do here, folks, in the Protect Your Neck podcast. We're breaking down high-level MMA. We're going down a nice main street. It's nice. Everything's nice. Everything's bright. You know, the kids are out, the sons are out, and then old Dan Tom, captain of the steering ship, takes a hard left turn down a dark alley. How did we get here? All right, back on track. Joseph Duffy versus Reza Madadi. I got Joseph Duffy. The price is stupid, ridiculous. It reminds me the trappings of the Darren Elkins and, Mirsad Bektik, which I did say before, why I stayed away from it, even though my pick was Bektik, as my pick is Duffy here. I didn't play Madadi, though. I didn't do the thing like I did with Pekalin, because I really think Duffy's going to win. I played the inside the distance at minus 150. I felt pretty good about that upon second. I thought it was pretty unpredictable kind of at first, but as I was watching more, it's just essentially comes down to, do you have faith that Duffy's making the right adjustments? Pardon me, from the Poirier fight. Pardon me again. And he's going to be able to defend takedowns, because Madadi makes it ugly against the cage, and he's deceptively good there. He's deceptively good with his takedowns against the cage. The problem is just his defense is just ridiculously terrible, ridiculously awful, striking-wise. It's a night and day difference, and it's just hard not to see him getting pieced up in space for as long as he's there. So if he can thwart him, catch him coming in, and just thwart a couple of his attempts, I think he's going to be able to change the tone of this fight. Madadi's been dropped a lot. Granted, there's a break in that trend, so it's not really worth pulling up on the whole grand scheme, because there's a big time break in there. But you kind of just look at the repetitive patterns for a trend, and you see that when he does get hit, it really kind of can change the trajectory. He toughed it out, which is why I took him to upset Jan Cabral. But Jan Cabral is not exactly like your knockout puncher, though, right? And Duffy is through precision and technique and speed. And yes, and on that note, we are going to take a break and come back with the main card for UFC London right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. Cucarachas enojadas. Right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for UFC London, breaking down the main card, and that is going to bring us to the opener, which will take us to the featherweight division, one of my favorites, one of the hottest rising divisions, trying to get its name up there with lightweight and welterweight, right at the top of the heap. That's going to be sirens. I wonder if you can hear that. Probably. Marty, I don't know how, but they found me. Dan, enough with the movies. Arnold Allen versus Makwan Amirkhani. This was one where I came in leaning toward Amirkhani. Big fan of this guy. Admittedly, overhyped, but big fan of this guy. Just because he's really weird. in random, and I made a nice pretty penny off him on his debut when he hit that Andy Ogle random fluke TKO. I thought he was just going to wrestle Andy Ogle, so I played him for the dog money and paired him up with Kenny Robertson, who I thought was just going to wrestle and ended up knocking out Sultan Ali on that same card. So that was nice. That was nice. I think it was like the two main dogs I played, and they hit. It was just really weird. Dog plays, I know. It was really shots in the dark that cash. See, I guess that's why I remember it. But wanting to see more. But when you go back and look, he's a guy that you want. You know, I don't know if he wasn't getting good training before All Stars and SBG, but he essentially did the same thing from like his first like 10 fights or first like 8 fights. Because I watched like literally all his fights in succession, and it's like he's using awesome wrestling ability, but he's allowing himself to be taken down, fall back, falling back for submissions, getting caught in submissions, being lackadaisical because he's confident in his abilities, and using the kind of the same parlor tricks of leg locks and heel hooks to get out from bottom. He doesn't really have anything else. He's not even getting up to hips or even re-wrestling in for single legs and using like wrestling style, you know, get ups, which he's gotten better at. But yeah, it was really, really bad. Like, you know, I was talking about earlier about trappings, and you kind of see him get caught in that trapping for a little bit where he got two heel hook victories and he's just going for it every time. Thankfully, he hasn't done that really since coming into the UFC. But he really hasn't done much else either. He hasn't developed much of a striking game. He's kind of done an imitation of Conor McGregor a little bit in his last fight, it looked like, with his stance, but he's still doing the same thing. He's doing that Aljamain Sterling thing where he'll put, you know, not nearly throwing as much as Aljamain, by the way. Aljamain, way better striker, throws way more, does way more than Amir Khani. But like Aljamain in the sense that he'll throw like a little prod out there just to kind of set the engagement pool to his terms before jumping and diving in, making sure the temperature's okay, getting someone else to commit to that temperature and coming in, and then he has that lightning fast level change he keeps on a dime, and you know he's probably going to be able to get Arnold Allen down in this fight. That said, Arnold Allen, going back to another thing I mentioned previously in the card about TriStar, he's been working with TriStar. He's also working with another camp, and as I said in my breakdown, this essentially comes down to like the adjustments, you know, what adjustments each guy is going to show. Amir Khani's more of a wild card because he's shown less and has less of a sample size and situation to show us stuff realistically or to realistically expect it. Whereas Arnold Allen, you know, has his own flaws too. It's very wild. He's getting caught, getting countered, whether it was by takedowns or strikes. And, but we already saw his adjustments with just one camp with TriStar. And again, just like, you know, certain fighters, like I felt like John Calderwood, it would do well, and other fighters, I felt Arnold Allen's the same because, again, what TriStar, what are their three main things, in my opinion, of course? Jab fundamentals, ring generalship, and wrestling for MMA, and that's perfect for Arnold Allen, you know, what he needed. And we saw that from the fundamentals to head position, you know, that guys like Matt Wozerzek, I forget, the KSW guy who's pretty touted that most people don't know because he's swallowed by the KSW organization, which is going to be more common with the way contracts are running. That's another tangent. But yeah, we would see this kind of in victory and defeats, we would kind of see this problem of wrestling pressure. So I was like, yeah, again, Amir Khani. But in his last fight, you know, Arnold Allen was the one, you know, maybe in his last two fights even, you know, was the one showing good head pressure and fundamentals and high hoisting on his overhooks and better choices on his get-ups. You know, I like he uses single-leg get-ups, which I love. You know, I was just talking about those. I'm a big fan of those. He uses those. The problem is in the more chaotic scrambles, he'll kind of do a turtle out and tripod up to stand. And, you know, these guys that are more quick and smaller and limber, they can kind of get away with that. But the problem with that is it gives a back mount and a front headlock, and that's where Amir Khani's strongest. We talk about, even though he's not as bad about it with the leg locks or other, you know, low percentage submissions, Amir Khani does less of that and he sticks to more his high percentage submissions. And what are Amir Khani's high percentage spots? Taking backs and front headlocks, because he can go from cradles, darce chokes, guillotines. He's real competent from chokes from there and transitions and chain offs. So yeah, Allen's going to be in the danger zone when he stands up. It's not getting taken down that I'm worried about. It's when he stands up. The reason why I'm siding with Allen, though, is not so much that he's a better striker and can counter, even though it's not his forte, although that jab is definitely going to be helping him counter a lot now because he's catching guys and measuring that distance, you know, as a southpaw. But with Amir Khan, relaxing that I'm comparing him to Khabib, but only comparing him to Khabib in the sense of his commitment. He's so committed, although, I'll be honest, Amir Khan, I think he's much better wrestler than he's giving credit for. I mean, when he's just within hoisting distance of a guy's hips, like, he'll send guys launching. He just gets lackadaisical. Like, he almost does it, like, boastfully and braggadociously. And when he's adjusting and hoisting in the air and adjusting these angles, you'll see him get caught in guillotines repeatedly in the UFC and in the regional circuit, although he hasn't been caught with that choke yet. He could be here with, Arnold Allen, burping again, but because as he showed against Allen Omer, you know, he was able to score a guillotine in the third, which is also noteworthy because, Amir Khan can tire. You know, he's a guy with a very limited skill set that I've been kind of harping on, but more so his limited time in the cage to feel that limited sample size because he's only, in other words, the reason why the sample size is so small, maybe his skill set is so limited, or we really have no reason to see much of it, is because he's not in there. He's committed to the wrestling, A, and he's not in there for long, B. And when you're not in there for long, I love betting against Heat of Gas, or at least saying it's worth looking out for, sometimes even worth betting for, which I'll get to in a second. And he showed that propensity. He was dominating Mike Wilkinson, who was really game, but, you know, not the best grappler. And he was pretty dominating and setting the pace. It wasn't like a torrid, you know, he's such a good grappler. He wasn't allowing Wilkinson to seriously create scrambles that were discomforting. And really, he wasn't making Makwan hustle for the positions. And I believe Arnold Allen will, because Arnold Allen makes everybody hustle for whatever they get out of him. And guys scoring him, whether it's grappling or striking, but you have to work for it. And it's harder to do in the striking with the jab, and I think it's going to be hard for Amir Khani to do, because if Amir Khani can't find a submission, you know, when Arnold Allen is on his way up, I think he's going to tire again here, because it's going to be much more torrid pace. In fact, Arnold Allen's one of the most torrid-paced guys you can probably fight in the division, arguably, for better or worse. And if Amir Khani hasn't adjusted that, and that wasn't like some fluke performance, and that could unfold, and that's why I picked decision, because I ultimately see Arnold fighting his way back into this fight late, and I mean late, like come the second round. So it's close. It's a coin flip fight. I don't necessarily playing it heavily, but I played Arnold straight up. I even played him at decision for the prop, which I'm going to pull up right now. But yeah, I played him straight up. He's one of the few dogs that I actually put in the parlay. And at five dimes, I don't know. This is late Thursday afternoon. Late Thursday afternoon. Cause it's West Coast for me, so y'all probably ain't going to get this till Thursday night at the earliest. So I don't know what the lines are going to look like, but Allen by decision was one of the first ones I took because, the way the matchup lines up, which, by the way, I detail it more in detail if you want to go to mixedmartialanalyst.com. My breakdown posted on the top there. But, yeah, as soon as I can find this decision, Jesus, Dan. Sorry, I'm a wreck, people. Don't mind me. Oh, yeah, sorry. Here it is. Plus 300. And, I did a fun flyer, round three, plus 1,150, which is kind of your normal price there, price range for a round three for most guys. All right, next fight is going to be, I'll say Chico Camus, Marlon Chito Vera versus Brad Pickett, the retirement fight. As I said in my breakdown, you know, I don't know how much of a bias this really is to state, because I don't know the guy, but I've been a long-time Brad Pickett fan from, you know, the WEC, Stephen Bonner freaking out, going, he's a pikey, look at him. And, you know, I love his style. Great dude. By the way, shout out to the One Punch Podcast. I do know his co-host, Brian Lacey. Brian Lacey, by the way, is the play-by-play commentator for ACB. So he's really awesome, dude. The English gent who's very funny, stand up comedian as well. If you're in that area, follow him regardless at Brian Lacey MMA, and more importantly, check out their podcast on iTunes at One Punch, or you know, I don't know, at One Punch's, you know, Twitter handle, but the One Punch Podcast. It's really awesome. But yeah, Pickett's a character. He's all his pants and people and all that stuff, but all business here. He's going to be fighting Marlon Vera. He's the deserved favorite. He's not as much of a favorite as you would think because, yeah, people aren't as high on Pickett as I am. I have this guy picked him against Almeida, although I stand by that pick because he did tax him. Although he didn't finish the job, he taxed him. Yeah, I picked him against Francisco Rivera when I thought it was going to be a close fight. It was. Picked him against Alcantara, which was completely wrong. And I did not pick him against Faber. I picked Faber for that and sadly was right. But yeah, I pick it here in what I think is going to be a back and forth fight. Marlon Vera, like, most of his fights aren't even, like, with training camps. Most of them are on short notice. So, like, a 10-day fight for him, like, it's not, like, out of the odd. It's, like, more of a vacation than it is, like, hassle, or than it is inconvenience, than it is stress, or than it is even a fight. It's probably more vacation to this guy. I don't know him, but he seems like quite the character, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with Marlon Vera's very endearing story about his daughter. He essentially is fighting for his daughter's welfare. Very touching story, but don't be fooled. Like, this guy's a savage. Like, he's a borderline, like, you know, he's a borderline jerk in there. Like, he reminds me of, like, a prime Roberto Duran, like, just grabbing the crotch and, right? That whole deal. And, like, that's the animal Marlon Vera turns into. So, if you're taking a shot on him, I do not blame you. I took a small one on Pickett, played him by decision, and played him straight up. Just small, more of a small, fun fandom pick here. But no, honestly, fandom aside, I think he should win this fight, and I do detail why. Not only is he the more technical striker, I think, you know, when things get hairy, his reactionary double is going to save him here. Marlon Vera doesn't have the best takedown defense, and he'll often, you know, don't look at those stats, by the way, they're very deceiving. I think they list him like 83%, but like Marlon Vera ends up on bottom all the time because he's always like going for like scissor leg takedowns and like guard pulls, and yeah, he's going to give Pickett a lot, ample opportunities to work on top from this fight, and I don't see that boding well for him if this fight makes it to the judges. And although Pickett has been dropped, stunned, or stopped in four of his last fights, which makes it easy to see where this thing can go south, I think he pulls it together here. I know MMA could give two shits. It's such a cruel sport. It doesn't care about happy endings or narratives because we don't really get much of those in the sport. But god damn it, it'd be nice to see one for Brad Pickett, Brad the Pikey Pickett here, right? So the pick is Brad Pickett, and hopefully it's just like a fight of the night where he doesn't get too much brain trauma and they both get paid, because both men could use it and deserve it for different reasons. Although, yeah, really hope Pickett gets the win. All right, co-main event, Gunnar Nelson versus Alan Joban, or as I say, the Russell Wong of MMA. He reminds me of Russell Wong. Deep pool, man, deep pool. This one, I literally almost got to the 11th hour and having to do a pick. Like, I came in leaning Nelson like everybody else, and like the odds clearly do. I believe he opened 2 or 3 to 1. I don't know. He's like 3 to 1 now, but like they might have come down a bit. But man, not only is Joban live, I feel that this line is way off. Like, essentially breaks down like this. Obviously, it comes down to, can Joban stop the takedown, even though, which has always been his trouble. And I'm like the first person, I'm a huge fan of Kenny Johnson, Bolt Wrestling. Guy's a savage. I miss his old food blogs on BJPen.com like fucking 8 years ago. But, you know, I've always been one to wave the flag of the work he's done with Alan Joban and the improvements he's made. But essentially, I'm going with Nelson because the grappling threat is too real. I think he's going to have his chances. Even though Joban is real technical, when he does turtle out the stand, we saw him almost have his back taken. And again, he was technically proficient in what he was doing and putting his butt to the cage, so he didn't get his back taken. But he still almost got his back taken by lower level guys. And Gunnar Nelson's going to be a next level guy in that regard. Even though I'm a switch stance guy, southpaw, karate guy, a Gunnar fan, I feel Gunnar Nelson's stand-up's overrated. It's not nothing to depend on. With Alan Joban, I mean, being, you know, I think he's been, like, dropped in, like, 3 of his last 5 or something, like, ridiculous. Like, so, I mean, he could definitely drop him and start, like, a finish, kind of like a Brandon Thatt situation, but it's hard to depend because he's doing one shot at a time, and he's going to be dancing in the kill zone. And more specifically, when you look at him against Southpaws, he is, wow, I'm only realizing I don't have the statistic now. I believe he's like 1-3 or 1-2 against Southpaws, Gunnar Nelson is. And you'll see, like, in Zach Cummings, even fights that he won, like, Zach Cummings is a Southpaw he beat. Zach Cummings was able to hit him off the counter and coming forward in both round 1 and round 2 with his left hand when he was throwing it. Left hands have been a problem for Gunnar Nelson. And I can spot me when some left hands are a problem, if you don't remember the one-legged Kelly call. And left hands is, like, a problem for Nelson. I'm not sure why it wasn't as clear as why it was for Rashad, but it was. It's what dropped him against Rick Story. And Rick Story dropped him with it from both stances, from orthodox stance and Rick Story's normal southpaw stance. Of course, he lost that fight. Damian Maya was a southpaw, although obviously he didn't lose that because of striking. And against Tumanoff, he was striking with him longer than he should have been. Gunnar even admitted that. Even in the post-fight press conference, the scary part was Gunnar admitted that that was the plan. He was going to feel him out, all looking for the Brandon Thatch thing, which could, you know, happen here. But the fact that he was looking for it against Tumanoff, and is the same reason why it's troublesome, because he could be looking for it against Joban doing MMA math. Well, Tumanoff beat Joban. It's fine. It's like, no, you shouldn't be doing it to either guy, because your strength is on the ground and those guys' strength are on the feet. Okay? So take their asses down. Why is that, you know, striking to set up a takedown should be your first thing, like, not striking to see how it goes. Like, that's so dumb. And then when you look at that fight with Tumanoff, even though he won and did really well, you saw Gunnar also gets hit to the body. He doesn't protect the body well, and he doesn't catch kicks to counter that much. So if Joban finds his rhythm and is onto this and studied this, then he's going to be eating shots to the body from that left liver kick and that left cross all day. So it's going to be trouble for Gunnar if he wants to play in with Joban on the feet, I think, because Joban's style is made to eat up Gunnar Nelson's style. So if Gunnar Nelson is not at least giving him takedowns to think about and pressure against the cage and so on and so forth, then working his takedown chains and transitions, then I could see Joban pulling the upset. And in fact, I warn this in my breakdown, and I stress this, how close it is, despite me picking Gunnar Nelson. And I'll say it again here. It scared me away. I don't have Gunnar Nelson in one parlay. I didn't play him straight up. I didn't play him at all. In fact, I put a little small sprinkle on Joban for the odds because they kept climbing. So I'll keep an eye on those. But yeah, Joban is super freaking live in this fight. If he can defend a takedown, get up, and then, you know, especially you consider if Gunnar Nelson starts to get tired, because he's kind of had inconsistent performances / a suspect gas tank, when you really want to dissect and peel back the curtain. So Joban is super live here. You know, again, Gunnar Nelson could still do it, not just on the ground, but on the feet. And I am picking Gunnar Nelson because, you know, even though Joban's takedown defense has improved, Gunnar Nelson's takedown game's improved. You know, we saw Damian Maya using symbiotic where he would go for the single leg, and when his arms would chain up from the lower extremity, lower thigh to, you know, just above the knee on the single leg, and he would chain up to the hips, his leg / hip would kind of outside reap / block that leg and replace where his hands were, and it would accentuate, you know, kind of off balancing his opponent for the takedown. Like, he kept hitting Nelson with that in transition, and then would kind of, like, spin out. And, you know, again, that lever awareness can be, you know, when a guy gets up and you're kicking the foot out of place, you know, that he's going to stand with, you know, a la Daniel Cormier to Dan Henderson, right? When Dan Henderson gets a stand and he just sweeps his foot out and makes him look like a little kid. It was just a small motion, but you do the right motions, you understand the levers, and you can understand when to take a lever when someone needs it the most. It creates big, big effects, no matter who the person is. So, you know, Gunnar Nelson immediately learned from that after the Damian Maya fight and applied that to Tumanoff. And I think those adjustments in the clinch that he makes in the takedowns are going to all but secure the reason why the odds makers think Gunnar Nelson should be such a favorite. But I didn't play him. I don't blame you for playing Joban here. The pick, officially, Nelson. inside the distance to submit him. All right, that brings us to the main event. Another fight where I came in leaning one way only to go the other, and I stayed the other way, though. I came in leaning toward Jimmy Manoa, maybe because his techniques are as menacing as they are technical on the feet, and Corey Anderson is very hittable. You know, he's been dropped in maybe like 3 of his last 5 fights or something like that. Stopped in one of them. Countered, you know, can sometimes be caught in space despite his improving footwork and activeness and volume, which, you know, I'm a big fan of high volume and all that stuff. But what swayed me was Corey Anderson's last fight. I think what sways the general public to Manoa, who's the favorite, and by, I'm seeing most picks toward him, I think is because of his last fight, where I think people are overvaluing it, and I think they're undervaluing Corey Anderson's fight versus Sean O'Connell, though really neither are sexy names. They're on the brunt of many people's jokes, though they're awesome guys, by the way. I'm not saying you should joke about them. They're great fighters. But, yeah, anyways, I know they're not the best measuring sticks as far as raw skills, I guess you could say, right? But what impressed me about is that Corey Anderson not just went back to his roots and did what he should have done against a guy like Sean O'Connell and wrestled him, but it was that he showed the discipline. Because, like, when I'm watching Corey Anderson, I'm like, why is he just letting guys up all the time? And you look at him, like, he understands the things I was just telling you about, like lever awareness. He's picking wrists, you know, to kind of re-break guys down. But he just was so aggressive with that mindset, like, you know, that kind of like just that one-track mindset of volume and output and offense, that in process of delivering offense in the form of ground strikes in these ride positions he's so good from, that he's letting loose and allowing space to stand. So he was constantly having this problem. If you go and look at Corey Anderson's fight, and then you watch his fight with Sean O'Connell, and he fixes that. He's switching up now his styles. Instead of being floating so loosely with his offense, he's using stuff that I really like a shoulder pressure, you know, from side control or half guard, where you're driving your shoulder into their face, and you see him using his shoulder to push his opponent's face away from him. Because you do that, you're just killing space. You're pinning a guy down. Where the head goes, the body must follow. If they can't look toward you, they're very limited to what they can do. All they can do is roll away. You essentially make someone can look away in a pinning sense when you're on top of them. You're pretty much kind of forcing them to move that way, which means they're going to give you their back, stuff like that, or going to let you pass the mount, which Corey Anderson did. And then if you notice, he used that Damian Maia. More guys are using that three-quarter mount to kind of ride and as a base of operations. And I do it myself, especially when I'm locking up a guillotine, or if I want to dismount to side control and do my dart setup, or I want to just kind of post off my forehead and, you know, have my shin riding on the inside of their thigh, that three-quarter mount I'm talking about, and posting on my forehead, which leaves my hands free to kind of work and choke and do a bunch of other things. You see Corey Anderson doing that, and it was really nice. It was really refreshing. And not only did he make this and make it a point to try to get him out of there in the first, and then he doesn't, and then gets right back on task, and the game plan shows the discipline game plan. I guess that was the thing. Discipline, people would criticize Corey Anderson. You know, you hear Mark Henry freak out in the corner and crap, but he showed that. And not only did he show it, you then fast forward a little bit to the post fight, and he calls himself out. He goes, the same thing I was just saying to myself. You're going, I was trying to figure, and Corey Anderson, the way he says it, I was trying to figure out why. Corey Anderson is just so innocent. He's just so positive. Like, he's like a positive speaker. Like, I don't mean to insult them by saying that, but like, but yeah, he was really like, it won my respect because it was super smart and intelligent. Like, he was like, I couldn't figure out why, but this is, people kept getting up on me, and I had to change that and get back to that. And he just like went through this checklist. I'm like, damn, that spot on. And fighters can, it's so rare to see fighters correct themselves verbally, much less physically. And he did both on the main stage right there, you know? So that was a big, big sign. His chin is still more than human, but, you know, he is young and these heavier weight guys, you do got to give a bit more leash. They traditionally have been able to take more punishment, have longer careers. Not that we should lean on this. Y'all know that I'm a real advocate for head trauma, so I'm definitely not trying to come off insensitive there. Corey, I'm glad to see him do that because he shouldn't be testing his chin so much, even if there is nothing wrong with it. Because you never know. He could be one of those guys from wrestling who come over, you know, from all the head clashes that happen from wrestling. I mean, people don't realize, if you're not familiar with wrestling, go watch some NCAA footage or just a kind of wrestling to any wrestling tournament and just kind of look at the nature of it when they're shooting in and clashing and how many times these guys are hitting heads. So when you see guys, kind of wrestlers come in, you know, we've seen it before without mentioning names, you know, guys come in and you're like, well, this guy didn't have that many wars. Why'd the clock just start getting turned out? And it's like, well, they accrued it from other places, you know? So, yeah. But anyways, I feel confident in Corey Anderson here. I played him underdog. That said, I mean, you keep these guys out of your parlays. This is still close to a coin flip fight. Like, Manawa could very well win and catch him, you know, with his left hook and piece him up with the leg kicks if Corey, you know, is bad about, you know, checking those. But it's just, Manuel's not your typical lane weight counter striker. He's more of a pressure and a feint, draw you out. And if what comes back at him is to his liking, then maybe if he's in the right position, he will throw back. And there's a lot of ifs there, right? A lot of ifs. He needs the right temperature. And when he gets the right temperature, it's poetry in motion. Manuel is an outlier, 37-year-old. Only training for 6 or whatever years is insane for how good he looks like. Rooting for the older dudes for sure, and he, you know, doesn't have as much time, so, you know, a win would definitely do him more in the big picture, so big ups to Manawa here if he wins. He's my first pick. Enjoy watching that guy fight, but I can't go against what the eyes are seeing. And the eyes are seeing Anderson inside the distance, and I think a safe... Maybe not a safe play, but you know, if you're looking for kind of a parlay fodder, -300 for fight doesn't go the distance, because no matter who wins, I don't see this fight going the distance. I don't see Manawa winning a decision because with his destructive nature to Corey's suspect chin, like if he's doing well, he's probably going to finish the fight. And even if Corey Anderson, who I think hits harder than people give him credit to, at least as far as ground striking goes, it's gotten a lot better. Yeah, it's hard to see him dominating even kind of a wrestle fuckfest, pardon my French, Jimmy Manawa, who I think tires and has a suspect gas tank. So it's just really hard to see either guy lasting in the other's fire, right? So that's a possible avenue and angle for playing the fight, but that's essentially it. Those are my picks, plays, Benjamin shaking. And I'm not sure if I might, like... Depending, I know I'm tired of, and I'm bad about doing these after parties. I was so tired. I literally, like, I know I told you I was going to be there for the after party, and it sucks. There's no point recapping it now because, like, it's gone by. But, like, man, I was so tired. I brewed 2 cups of coffee. I drank them, and I was still too tired. Like, I promise I tried. I'm going to try again this time. Eventually, once my dumb ass gets better with, like, this Skype thing, I'm going to be getting more people to do them with me, like, and stuff, and maybe even, but, if not, I might stretch it out because it's going to be, you know, like I said, it's going to be 3 weeks off, so we're going to need to fill time. That said, I'm going to be filling it with those top 5 episodes. So again, if you have ideas for top 5 themes, you know, top 5, you know, post-fight interviews, top 5 interviews outside the end of the cage, top 5 leg locks, top 5 whatever, use hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to submit that. Or submit your list, or submit your questions, or submit your hot takes. That's right. Hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast at the PYM Podcast. Thank you all for following, kind words and shares. I'm trying not to abuse the shout out thing like I always do, but I do want to give him a man, speaking of post fight shows, one of the best post fight shows, and he doesn't do it as much, and it bums me out because it's really awesome, and he's just funny and unique cat. That's Andrew Lawrence, or you might know him on Twitter, is at the Clown Kid. Shout out to him. Very, 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 very cool dude. I don't know if he knows it. Probably doesn't even listen to this, but if he does, whatever. Secret's out, but I want to get you on this, my man. You're definitely somebody I want to get on here. Really enjoy him. You can hear him, by the way, on the MMA Circus with Nick Baldwin. I believe it's a Bloody Elbow product. You can find on iTunes. Great stuff there as far as, like, fighter interviews, all that stuff. And they break down fights and talk, and they're good dudes. You should listen to them. And Andrew's a funny dude. But yeah, I just wanted to give that guy a shout out. Probably going to bug him soon and get him on one of these like top 5 shows. I love getting people in the community. And I'll be having my man Daniel Levy. He was nice enough to have me on his show. I've been meaning to have him on here. And I'll be back with the top 5 bad tattoos, MMA tattoos, with a man, John Lee, who recently I did his program, if you want to call it that. John does some awesome videos. Shout out to John Lee. But yeah, you guys are all awesome. Sorry if I'm being like hippie and positive. I really enjoy the community. You know, even if, you know, you're people with crazy opinions or crazy senses of humor or dark senses of humor, or you're an asshole, I still love you and I'll probably get along with you because that's who I am. Not trying to be fake about it either. Like, I genuinely think we all should support one another, you know, within memes. I get, you know, get the outlets and stuff, it gets tricky and all that stuff, but that doesn't matter. I'm friends with a bunch of people from different outlets, as y'all can tell. And fuck that, you know, good people support good people, and at the same time, we all need to bust each other's balls and keep each other in line too. Stop taking this shit so seriously, because it's fun. On that note, yeah, that's it. Alright, I'll be catching you guys hopefully this Saturday. If not, we will be back soon with another episode of the Protect Your Neck podcast. Until then, yeah, that's right, you know, protect all your shit.